Hello there, and welcome to Quite So. I am your host, Dada, and I want to remind you that this podcast airs bi-weekly on Sundays on the following platforms: YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and iHeartRadio. I also urge you to visit my website, dadaisms.com, and hop onto my creative journey. Today, I am honored to have Kara Sotile as my guest on the podcast. She is a board-certified nurse practitioner who specializes in adult geriatric primary care. Kara has 16 years of clinical experience in hospital and primary care settings in the US and abroad. In 2020, Thomas Jefferson University Hospital awarded Kara the Structural Empowerment Clinical Nurses Award for her volunteer work in Haiti. And this brings us to why I'm having an interview today with Kara. That is because she is the co-founder and president of a charity called O, One with Earth. And you can find O at their website, www.wero.org, or on Instagram at wero. They are having a tailgate in September. Those who are in the US might be able to join. And this would be basically a fundraiser for their charity. Before we get to the actual interview, I want to just tell you that I interviewed Kara on June 3rd. Today is June 14th. You will be listening to this as of June 15th. And basically, what happened in the past 12 or so days have been mind-boggling. A day or two after my interview with Kara, there was a US travel ban on Haiti. And already, Kara and her US team had been having difficulty reaching Haiti or going there because of the civil unrest that had been going on in Haiti. And luckily, they have a team on the ground in Haiti helping with the logistics there. There has also been a lot of unrest, a lot of protests in the US in different states, because of the immigration laws. Other things that have happened these past 10 or so days, war started between Iran and Israel. We have a siege on Gaza and a flotilla that was aiming to draw the attention to the siege, was seized by Israel, and the people on board were detained. There's, of course, the ongoing war between Ukraine and Russia, the precarious situation in between India and Pakistan, different sites of unrest in Africa. And the interview that you listen to today just shows you how one person who is not rich, I mean, Kara is not a billionaire, using her own money to help people. She's crowdfunding. She's doing her best to be able to secure small amounts of money, a little by little, just to help others. And this shows you how one person can help a large community. Kara started off by wanting to help 78 orphans in one area of Haiti. There are now 100 orphans. She ended up serving a whole community and opening a school for the orphans as well as this community's children. And this school now serves 450 children as well as their parents, and the community. So imagine the impact that one small thing that you would like to do to help others, one act of kindness, can actually amalgam, snowball into something much more than what you initially intended. And that is the beauty of helping others. And I hope that this interview today gives you this feeling of hope and peace that despite everything that's happening in the world around us, despite all the ugliness, we still have people out there who are helping others, who are doing their part in small parts of the world. And I said this in the interview, I'll say it again. Everybody, if we each do our small part of kindness, of helping others, we can affect huge change. Let politicians be politicians. We as humans can be there for each other. I hope you will enjoy this interview and let's get on with it. Cara Sotile, you are the president and co-founder of O, One with Earth, which is a charity, a nonprofit organization that you set up in 2019. So that's 2019 in Philadelphia, I believe. And you set it up specifically to support an orphanage in Zambia, in Haiti. Tell us a bit more about this charity and how it came to be.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had been volunteering in Haiti since 2010, actually. So that is when I first made connections with Damavi at Orphanage. It was right after their big earthquake, and they established this orphanage essentially for children whose parents had passed away. So met most of the kids and the managers of the orphanage back in 2010. Was continually going down in Haiti to work as a nurse practitioner. In 2019, when I went for one of the medical trips, it was discovered that Damabia had lost all of any type of government funding that they had had. So it was very jarring to see the starvation, literally the starvation of the children when we went and visited to do a medical clinic there. So we brought toys, we brought chalk. They were eating the sidewalk chalk. So it was super upsetting. Obviously, they were only eating once every 3 days because of all the funding that they lost. So, long story short, when I got home, I said this ha something has to happen. So I started just kind of telling the story on social media and raising money to do food deliveries. That was it. I said, we're just going to do some biweekly food deliveries because these children are actually starving. So people were, I think, just like Venmoing me, giving me cash, and I was just sending it over to my friend Mitch over there, and he was getting the food deliveries. And then it kind of just spiraled and we decided to make it official and make it a nonprofit, and we got a board of directors together and went from there. So it all started with feeding the children. And then it, of course, turned into building a school on the orphanage grounds and just being officially a part of Damabia Orphanage. And since January of 2019, we have done food deliveries every 2 weeks. So the children have eaten every day. And have had plenty of water to drink and all of the things since 2019. So it's something we're very proud of.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. I mean, we definitely need more people like you in the world to help wherever they are called. If you do a little bit in Haiti, someone else does a bit in somewhere else, and it comes together, and that's beautiful. You originally had 85 children in the orphanage, and now the school is also for the community, and you have 450 kids who are going to the school as well. So it's not only the orphanage, it's the community that you're involving. And you're even more than that, you have an education service. They're trying to work out some type of study internship program with the US. How are you working on this section?
So, unfortunately, in Haiti, especially now with all of the gang violence and the turmoil, there's really no job opportunities, right? So the children, they turn 18, they've gone to school. So we're trying to pay as much as we can to get kids enrolled in colleges. But again, they might graduate college, and then what are their opportunities? So we are trying to get Wi-Fi for them, potentially get laptops for them. That's one of our projects, a computer lab, Wi-Fi, and setting up, international jobs. A lot of these students, and children rather, they speak English. So to be able to connect them with translation companies that can translate for Haitian people who are in hospitals in the US. So that's, our main goal is to give them opportunities that every child deserves, so then they can thrive and they don't have to depend on help. They don't have to depend on us to do for them. They can do for themselves, which they want to do. They just need the opportunities to do so.
Yeah, definitely. And you are doing also more than that. You also try to create a sustainable environment. You're trying to do an eco-friendly system integration with a vegetable garden, solar electricity, water collection and filtration, and definitely the water, I believe, is one of the more important things too, because you have many diseases from unfiltered water. So has this actually gone underway, or you're still, is it a future project?
So we actually were successful in doing the water. So there is a water tank. It does have to get filled. It's not like a well water. Unfortunately, where Demabia is located, the ground underneath is just rock. So there's not a way to do a well, but we did successfully establish a good water tank that is insulated and doesn't get bacteria from the outside in, and that gets filled up every 2 weeks. We have a water truck that comes, and we have one for drinking water and one for bathing. So one that obviously you cannot drink, and that's super important. I mean, cholera, which is a waterborne illness that has been spreading around Haiti because of sanitation reasons, it's been really serious, and it's killed people, it's killed children. So, in our community, they do have safe drinking water. So that's been fantastic, and we've just been, again, we've been filling it up every 2 weeks. That's part of our delivery services.
You are initially a nurse practitioner. So you went
Correct.
to Haiti initially as a nurse to help out
Correct.
in the earthquake of 2010. Tell us about
Yes.
this experience. How was it to work in a disaster area?
Yeah, I mean, I was 21, maybe 22 when I went down there. I had gone to a couple countries in South America during college that were impoverished, right? So I had some exposure. I volunteered in Guatemala, I think my junior year of college. However, Haiti's on a whole different spectrum. It's the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, and to go there as a 22-year-old was wild, just to see. And the whole country was in disarray. I mean, there were houses that were just demolished, and people. Thousands and thousands of people just living in tents, and setting up the medical clinic there. It was very rewarding, and I enjoyed it. However, I did leave there thinking that wasn't enough. Like, we gave them antibiotics, we wrapped their wounds, we helped them in that for that acute moment, but we didn't, help them with their housing situation, right? We didn't help them with the PTSD that they were experiencing. There's only so much that you can do. But yeah, going there as a 22-year-old girl and just seeing all of the destruction. However, I will say there was a part of me too that just was a lesson learned, because the children were running around playing, and it shows just the innocence of kids, and the kids are happy with, they don't need all of these things. They don't need all of these toys and this excess. And they are happy with playing in some rocks and hanging out and joking around. And they would chase our car when we would drive to the clinic. They would all run after it and like try to hang on, and they would laugh. And so it was also very eye-opening in that way too, to just be more appreciative with what you have, and you don't, again, you don't need all of these things, right?
Yeah, you saw the difference between living with nature versus living in a city. And yes, so I mean, of course, each has its advantages and disadvantages, but you see how important it is to connect with nature as well, that even in disaster area, they still had some joy because they were like one with Mother Nature, so to speak. Since this earthquake, and even since you established O, The pandemic struck in 2020, 2021. Another earthquake was there in 2021. And up till today, you know, the political unrest we're like discussing earlier. So how has this affected your work as a charity? And you know, tell us about the impact there.
Yeah, so we actually had a trip planned March 2020. We were going. I think we're 3 days away from the trip. We packed, we had all of the things that were donated to us, all of the things. And then there were some rumors that there was this virus going around. You know, we didn't know what was going on. And then right at the same time, there was like a big travel warning against Haiti. And there's always been travel warnings against Haiti. I would just go anyway. But a lot of people in the group didn't feel comfortable, understandably. They had never been. So, you know, it ultimately ended up getting canceled, which it worked out because I believe they shut the borders during the time that we were there. So we probably would have gotten like stuck there. So it ended up working out that we didn't go. You know, however, moving forward with the pandemic, it caused, you know, extreme inflation in Haiti. And the prices, you know, when we started doing these food deliveries in 2019, and I talk about this all the time just because it's wild. The deliveries were $600 every 2 weeks for 2 weeks worth of a ton of food, ton of water, ton of supplies, $600. Now they're like $1,200 every 2 weeks,
Oh,
and
goodness.
it's less stuff. We actually had to cut back. We had to say, please, only the necessities. Obviously, the kids are not going hungry, absolutely not. But you know, we're saying, you know, maybe instead of bringing this amount of bars of soap, cut it back. You know, we cut back on like some of the toiletries and some of the non-essential items. So that, you know, and that was a result, unfortunately, of COVID, right? You know, with the inflation and just the violence really went up in Haiti as well. And then during COVID in 2021, their president was assassinated. So that really caused and catapulted the gang violence after that. So, you know, I think the gang violence was a result of COVID. You know, I do think that people were fed up with what was going on, and there was a lot of you know, the lack of government, the lack of security. And so yeah, it really changed the organization. And we haven't been able to get down there since 2019 either, which is sad. You know, I think we could go down. We would have to hire security, and I just don't feel that it's right to waste those resources just so we can go down. There's so much that we can do from afar, and we have successfully done that from afar.
Because you
And a
have
lot of
someone, sorry, you have
no.
someone in Haiti who is helping out. You said like Mitch, so there is some kind of like
Yes.
an office that you're working with on the ground.
Yes.
So
So
tell us a bit
Mitch
more.
actually he's fantastic. He and I have been friends, very good friends since 2010, since I first went down to Haiti. And he is Haitian American. He was born in Haiti. I think when he was around 7 or 8, he was sent to Florida to go live with his aunt just to have some better opportunities. And then after the earthquake, he actually went back to Haiti to start a driving business. He wanted to help the economy there. So he had a really successful driving business where they would take tourists and volunteers, and they would, you know, transport them and all of the things. So Mitch from day one has been so deeply involved, and you know, you know, paying his drivers essentially to go and do the deliveries and drop them off. And you know, a lot of people question, which I understand, but a lot of people question. They say, "Well, how do you know, the money is going to the children?" And you know, we know because he sends us all the receipts. He knows, you know, he knows what the people want to see. He sends us all the photos of the food getting dropped off. He actually is not physically in Haiti. He had some health problems and had to go back to Florida to get care. So, but he has all of his employees still who are completing the food deliveries for us, and you know, organizing the birthday parties and the Christmas parties and all of those things. So it's been fantastic to have him. He's been a huge asset, and he thanks us all the time. He says, "I don't know what those children would be doing or where they would be if it weren't for you. And I, you know, and but I thank him all the time because it's without him, we wouldn't have been able to do any of this.
And you know, if those who follow you on Instagram, they see that the food deliveries are there, they see the amounts that are being delivered, so everything is there is a lot of transparency in this whole transaction. So in the end, you can do what you can do. If you can't be there physically, you have to rely on people as well, so that's important. And now we're talking about the gangs and all that, and you have the problem of the orphanage being in the middle of that zone, and you're probably thinking of relocating. And how, I mean, have you thought of anything so far? Any are any plans in place? And if you do move, what do you have plans for the community? Because again, the community now is involved in this orphanage, and the other kids who are not in the orphanage are attending school that you are obviously setting up. So would you maybe keep the school going if the orphanage moves? I don't know. Just give us your thoughts. I know it's up in the air, I think, for you, but what are your thoughts on what's
So
happening?
perfect worlds, let's do the perfect world scenario. We have plenty of funding that can allow us to, you know, move the children. There is a organization that we have very close ties with. It's called Haitian American Caucus, HAC, and it's run by one of our really good friends, Sam Dargwin, who's Haitian American. He moved his organization because his organization was in the middle of all of the gang violence. He moved his organization to Southwest, I believe it is Haiti, Southwest Haiti. And he said, you know, whoever can come, great. Whoever can't, I'm sorry. Like they had no other choice. I mean, there were gang members kidnapping the children at his school and center. They had to leave. So perfect world, we would, yes, we would get the children, transport them, get them down to that area that Sam is in because we know that that's safe. The gangs want nothing to do with that area. They want the capital, right? You know, in a perfect world, it would be fantastic if we could move the whole school down there and the whole community, you know. I don't know if that's possible. So I think that realistically, the school would still run there if it can, depending on what the gang violence is looking like. But the school would stay, would keep running. But yes, we would move just our kids, our 100 kids at Damavio Orphanage, to that area and, you know, collaborate with this other organization, get all of those kids in this new school that's being, that's, you know, in the works, hopefully down in Southwest Haiti. So it's unfortunate because we don't want to leave our community. They depend on us. They you know, trust us. However, if push comes to shove and it's just simply not safe and things can't even operate, we are going to have to move them. And, you know, in terms of specific plan, we have somewhat of a plan in the works that we've spoken with Mitch about, you know, getting some school buses, loading the kids up in the school buses and driving. And then they drive to a port. And then where that port is, they would get on a ferry boat. And there are ferry boats that are operating down there, ferry boat to the specific place on the island. And there is a big house that's being built down there by HAC that, you know, our friend Sam said the kids could stay there while you're figuring out other housing, you know, plans. So that's kind of the rough draft. You know, there are Mitch who runs the car business. He said there are, you know, school buses that we can rent. They wouldn't necessarily be school buses, but you know, big type of
Vans
buses.
or yeah.
Yeah, you know, and the problem is as the gang violence worsens and intensifies, it is going that commute will be harder. We're going to have to make sure that the drivers have cash on them because a lot of times the gang members block roads, so you have to essentially pay them off. The children wouldn't really be able to bring any of their things because they would most likely get stolen. So there's a lot of we have an idea in our head of what it needs to look like for them to leave. But it's probably going to take a lot of money and, a lot of strategic planning. And right now things are stable. They haven't, they're about, the gang violence is about a mile and a half from Damabia, and it hasn't moved closer yet, knock on wood. So we're kind of just like gritting our teeth and pushing through and doing as much as we can until we have to plan otherwise. So
Would it be easy to get the supplies to the new place if when you move, like let's say you did move the orphanage, because now you have also a ferry involved and more transportation. So how
yeah.
do you feel that would also look?
Yeah, that's a great question. There wouldn't be as much access to, it's a more rural area, so there's not really any like grocery stores. That's very limited. I think it would be more of, again, perfect world and ideas, having some chickens down there that, have living more off the land. But I think it would be possible. I'm sure there's some type of facility that we could get, but yeah, it would be harder. It's a much more rural area. It would be more difficult. So another thing to think about, and also who are we going to hire down there to get all of the things? Because that's a dangerous job that I don't think a lot of people want to do. You're driving in the midst of chaos with all of these supplies in the back of your car. Sometimes they have to go in the middle of the night to do it, because they can't be, they're going to get stopped and potentially killed and robbed. So,
That is not easy at all. And I wish you the best of luck. And I
thank
guess the best option in that case is to build like a huge farm, a sustainable farm where you can hire a chef, a cook, and
Yes.
live off the land literally. Where
Yeah. And I think one day we will get there. I think we are a wonderful organization. We've made so much progress over the 6 years. We've had a lot of hiccups, and we continue to push through, and I think we will get there one day. I think it will happen. I think we'll if we have to move them, I think it would all work out for the better, and it'd probably be a better piece of land. So
Well, so you're playing it by ear at the moment, waiting to see what arises, and you'll take decisions accordingly. And that's all you can do
yes,
now. Yeah.
that exactly. Right now we are making sure the kids are fed. We are working on getting some summer activities in the books now that school is let out. We want, again, we want the kids to, this is so traumatic, and we want the kids to feel like they are in a nice, safe bubble there. We want activities for them to do. We want to keep the deliveries going. We've done, health and wellness checkups. So we want to kind of just keep everything moving as if we don't have to physically change locations. And we're getting good feedback from the men who run the orphanage, and Mitch as well, just what the scene is looking like down there. And the past few weeks have calmed down a little bit. So hopefully that just can stay like that.
The nice thing about O is that you have basically volunteers working with you, so you don't actually pay people at the moment, and you're able to invest all the donations in the community and in the work that you have to do. Do you feel sustainable for the future that you continue with only volunteers? How do you envision that happening?
That's a great question. The volunteers sometimes can be hard to go by. It's a lot of bribing, right? If you volunteer, you get a free ticket to our tailgate. And I don't know if it's necessarily sustainable for long term, right? I think at some point, once O grows, which we definitely plan to do, we are going to need somebody on full time, right? To contact donors, write grant letters. For now, it's worked out. People are very gracious. People do want to come out and support. They do want to spread the word. A lot of times I'll give my mom a task, like, "Hi, mom, we have a GoFundMe right now for one of our college students." And she's like, "Perfect, I'm on it." And she sends it out to her groups. And but in terms of long term we are going to probably have to get somebody on board to and
No.
pay them.
No, of course. I mean, in the end, it is an organization. It becomes an organization with time, you know. But as long as people at the helm are honest and they try to do things, you know, as transparently as possible, it all works. I mean, in the end, if someone is not doing this work, who is? So, do you want to help people or do you not want to help them? That's ultimately the question.
Exactly. And I think everybody wants to help. Most people do have a good heart. They just don't know where to start. And I think if we give people, what I've noticed is giving people direction, like, hey, can you come up and come up a little bit early to the tailgate and help us set up? People want to do that. Again, we might be bribing them a little bit with free tickets, but people do, they do want to help. I think it's oftentimes folks don't know where to start. And I think also an issue is sometimes people don't feel comfortable potentially volunteering or donating time and money to an organization that they don't trust. So I think that because we are such a trustworthy organization, people have watched us grow and have seen exactly what our money has gone to, it's more satisfying and comfortable for them to help and get involved.
Yeah. And since you brought up the tailgate twice now, let's talk about this because you did this tailgate last year in 2024. It was Monday Night Football. The tickets were $55 for general admission, $149 for VIPs. So tell us about last year's event, and then we get to this year's event, and how you're going to plan this one.
So last year's event, we've actually this will be, I think, our fifth tailgate. We've done one pretty much every year. So last year's event was, I believe it ended up, you're right. It was Monday night. So it was a little bit harder to get as much money as we wanted to because it was a weeknight. But unfortunately, that was just the only date that really worked. But it was great. I mean, we have a DJ that comes, and in Philadelphia, football is huge, and people love to come out. And it was $55 for general admission, all you can drink and all you can eat. I mean, to me, that's a great deal. Like two beers at inside the stadium or at a bar around the stadium is pretty much that cost. So we have, we've reached out to a lot of local breweries in Philadelphia and had them donate beer, donate alcohol. We have bartenders that, again, they volunteer their time and they come and bartend. So it's a really cool thing, and it's fun, right? So everybody has a great time, which I think also kind of takes, like, you forget that it's for something that's like, you forget that you're there for a charity, I guess you can say, because people just have a ball.
Exactly.
But yeah, and then I have one of my best friends is has an RV. So she and her husband are so amazing, and they donate their RV. So we have bathrooms for the VIP people. We have, a place that people can go in if they get cold. So it works out really well. And it's a lot of work, but last year I think we got $12,000. So the year before that, we got 20, I think, because the year before that was on a weekend, so more people came. But so we, I mean, these tailgates have saved us essentially, and have been able to help keep our heads above water.
Great. So, what about this year's event? It's in September at some point.
So this year it's September 21st. It is a Sunday game. And it's a 1 o'clock game, so people are going to have to get there a little bit early. But the Eagles won the Super Bowl last year, so I think people are going to be very excited to go and get there early and start tailgating. We haven't decided on a start time yet, probably 9, 10 a.m. And then because it's a 1 o'clock game, we'll definitely have a watch party, right? So we have a big projector screen that people can stay in the parking lot and watch the game. And it'll be September, so it's still going to be warm, and we'll have, all the food, all the drinks, and people will have a great time. So I'm looking forward to this year's.
The prices of tickets are still the same, or have they changed?
I think they're going to stay the same. I think $55 is for the general admission. I think that's good. And then for the
VIP.
VIP, I think we charge, Yeah. So I think we'll keep it. I think we'll keep it the same. Again, it's a really good deal, and I think we should charge more, but I think it's hard for people to justify to pay more than that.
You know, I hope that this year you'll get to 30,000 even, not just 20.
I hope
Just
so
hope
too. I hope so too. Oh, that would
for
be wonderful. $30,000. I'm going to manifest that amount.
Yes, exactly. Just like, ooh. I hope I've.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know, actually, going on your website, you find it's really very easy to donate because you have already put different donation amounts for different purposes. So people can
Yes.
donate monthly from $15, that's 1 5, $15. Then they could go up to $30 or $50 a month. And then yearly, they can pay a lump sum of 550 or 1,000 or 2,500. So basically, if you look at this range from $15 a month up to 2,500 annually, it's really a beautiful range, and it's so easy to go and to just click on your website which plan you want, which donation plan you want, and just go with it. So tell us a bit more though about how where these donations go and how it's divided.
Yeah, so we so our one tier, which is the child sponsor tier, and it's $30 a month. That is a, roughly how much it costs. You know, it's probably a little bit more at this point, but that's roughly how much it costs to feed to pay for a child's food for an entire month. $30. So inexpensive. And in return, and I think this is that's probably our most popular package. In return, we have the sponsor and the child get to know each other. And this one is really nice. And the kids know that there is a certain somebody out there who is actually paying for their food and who cares about them. And the children love it. They write little notes, and Levy, who is the orphanage manager, will take photos of it and send it to me, and I'll send it to their sponsor. And it's really just a nice way to not just blindly donate, but you're actually donating to a child's food, and you get to communicate, you know. Of course, not directly. We're not there yet, but if we get our computer lab, we will be there. But to communicate essentially with your child and see that you're donating directly towards them. So I would say that's, you know, that's our most popular one, and that's kind of how that particular tier works. And you know, as you go up with payments, there's the orphanage sponsor. I believe that that's $50 a month, and that goes again more towards not just food for children, but also, you know, coloring books, just, you know, activity books, you know, maybe towards the our summer program, things of that nature. So it kind of goes to a little bit, reaches out a little bit past food, which is really nice. And then of course, obviously, as you go up in the tiers, it just expands where the money's going to essentially.
The highest one is like a college fund, basically,
Yes.
the $2,500 donation.
Yes, which again, for college tuition for a whole year, it's
It's really
pretty cheap,
cheap.
you
Yeah,
know,
exactly.
comparison. Yeah, and we
Exactly.
do have two children in college right
No.
now. One is in med school, and the other one is in school to be a diplomat. They're like a po political science major. So that's just beyond words. I'm grateful for the those who contributed to that, so they can expand their horizons and you know, get more out of just being in the orphanage. So,
They are studying in colleges in Haiti, not
correct.
abroad at the moment. Yeah. So
Yep.
hopefully, like in the future, they might be able to study university abroad, or as you said,
Yeah.
internships. And when they graduate, you could have those. So that's
Yes.
beautiful. I
Yeah.
mean, what's beautiful
Yeah.
about what you're doing is that you are not abandoning the children at any age. Not it's not like you get out of the orphanage and you're on your own. You're actually, going with them into college as well. And I'm sure
Yes.
it'll be kind of like for life in a sense.
Yes. No, exactly. It's so true because I think, you know, this again, the sustainability is what we're focusing on, and to gain sustainability and independence is our motto, and it's not just giving them food every 2 weeks so they survive. It's also, the two boys, the one that's in medical school and the one that's in school political science, they will hopefully, get jobs. And then they might have a family and they can support their family and their kids can go to school. And it's just a really nice, healthy cycle, and breaking that cycle of poverty essentially, so they can thrive on their own.
I think we've covered everything we don't want to talk about. Do you want to say anything else about the foundation that I have forgotten to mention or?
Let me see my notes here. I mean, you were great. You asked all of the questions. I said parties back because I was reading my notes that said parties because we've thrown some parties for the kids. I already mentioned that though. No, I mean, it was wonderful speaking with you. You really covered everything, and it was so nice to be able to talk about the organization and where it started and where it is now. It's definitely it's good for me. It's a nice reflection point because I think I'm always moving forward and I'm always like, we have to do this and we haven't done enough, and it's nice to kind of reflect and see what we have done. And
Exactly.
it's been overall a successful journey, so
Very true. And
feels good.
I'm sure you're gonna do like amazingly well in the future as well. You're determined and your heart is in the right place, and that's what's important. So we'll get it done. Anyway, Kara, what can I say? Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for
It was so nice meeting
joining.
you. I really
Same.
appreciate this, that the stars aligned and we got to meet. This was wonderful.
So true. Anyway, I follow you on Instagram and I will keep in touch with you in
Yes, please,
the
let's do
future.
that.